44. On page 44, at your Dalit. And what that is he's talking about how the present generation is different from past generations. In that past generations were able to just will themselves to do what they had to do. And then he discusses how, as you know, starting from the biblical times, they were told rights and wrongs, and if someone slipped, they were great enough to will themselves to do what they had to do, summarily. But as generations declined, then they had to create more decrees, more rabbinic things. And then he goes on to how they had to then get involved with individual self-searching, and that this wasn't enough and that wasn't enough. These things we kind of glossed over. But here, in 14, in Yudalit, he begins at the final stage, like the one that's closest to where we are now, and that's where I wanted to start. Okay. So he says, Achar kach, komu hadoros v'achronim, the later generations arose, v'schilu lachtor, hey, lachtor means to dig. Dig into it, loshuvel lavoda, and to return to the service of Hashem, al yedei sheyogu b'chol kocham, through the fact that they toiled with all their energy, lachshov cheshbon osehem, to think over their accounting, balaylo, at night, al mitosam, on their beds. Meaning when they got into bed at night, they began to think over what they had to do. Achar kach himtziu od, afterwards they also came up with the idea, furthermore, lefanos lehem sho achas, to free up for them an hour, or sometimes it doesn't necessarily mean an hour, sho could mean like a period of time, shel zehirus, of Zahirus means like care to avoid a sin. Hakodemes lemaisa, which precedes the actions. Base hakitzo mehasheno baboker. At the time of getting up from sleeping in the morning. Meaning that in the morning, before they got to do anything, they would sit down for a while and think about what they're supposed to do as a way of getting a handle on what they would do and making improvements upon it. And then he's talking again about the morning, describing the morning at a time that Hashem machzir lanu es hanashama, Hashem gives us back to the soul, Malaya oz v'chedva, full of strength, and chedva means like joy. Meaning you get up in the morning, you're ready to go. And I guess a lot of people get up in the morning, they're not ready to go, but I know personally, sometimes in the morning you're not ready to go, but I don't know. And it's funny, because the English translation says, he returns the soul full of vim and vigor. That's a cute way of putting it. It's cute because it avoids the meaning of the words. But chedva means rejoicing. It's one of the words of rejoicing. You say in the Sheva Brachos, Gila Rina Ditzah B'Chedva. It's a kind of of happiness. Because he says it's Machzir as an Hashem Mulei Oz means Oz is strength. The chedva means some kind of happiness, like enthusiasm. V'Pinuya. And it's free, meaning that there's nothing going on just yet. Umisalesis. Now, misalesis, I don't know what that word means. Again, the translator just didn't translate it, if I remember. I looked to see how he translated. It says, the spirit is free, to reflect and do good. So, Zlahaskil Lohetim means to reflect and do good. Pinuya means free. Mislalesas, he just ignored. The translator. Now, I'm not criticizing whoever it is, because I don't know what it means either. But I'm just saying it's not a translated word in this translation. I guess with a dictionary, probably we could get some kind of meaning out. Yeah. But anyway, I invite you to please look at your dictionary. But the point is what he's saying is that these people dedicated themselves in the mornings for a shah, which means an hour, maybe it means just a period, but some not insignificant amount of time that people would, in the effort to, in attempt to bring their sort of untamed urges under control, they would spend time at night before they go to sleep and time in the morning before they start the day, reflecting on what's supposed to be done. Uvrov hayomim, then through more days, meaning as time continued to evolve, and like generations went, it became yet weaker. The smatu halavavos od yoser, the hearts became diminished, meaning that the inner strength of people od yoser v'yoser more and more. Atche ein han. Hananosim shel achshav, that the nanos means like I think an ant, the ants of the present, meaning we're such small people. Ha'istinus min hatochachos, who's an istinus means how do you define an istinus? It means like he's very particular and very fussy when it comes to rebuke, meaning that he can't take it. He's like too dainty to be rebuked. These ants that are too dainty to be rebuked, yicholun levater od migvuras haratzon shelohem klum, that they got to the point that they couldn't, with all this, they still couldn't bring their spirit under control, like just by, I guess, willing themselves to do proper things through reflecting at night, and then once again reflecting in the morning. People in this generation that's weaker, we believe in Torah in the concept of Nismatu Hadoros, the generations deteriorate. They don't get, people think that now people are smarter than they ever were. So we feel in Torah, we always say that every generation is weaker than the one before. So the generations of 100 years ago were smarter than us. They had more physical strength, more physical endurance, more psychological endurance, more ability to cope with all kinds of stresses, more ability to withstand all kinds of battering, psychological and physical. And they were much weaker than the people that were before them. I don't know, my Rebbe used to say, when you read about the sweatshops, they used to work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, said whatever it was. These guys that came in the late 19th century said, put somebody in a workplace like that, in a month they'll be dead. Said, it's not just in Torah, we say, the Rabbanim in the 19th century are much greater than today's Rabbanim. We believe that. We don't mess with Chassam Sofer and Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan and the Chafetz Chaim. These are people like in a different planet than we are. But he used to say, even secular people, you couldn't put people in a sweatshop. They were just different. They were just made of different stuff. We have more technology now. But each step of technology, it's always something that's a little advanced built on something else. The individual output intellectually is by no means proven to be greater just because we deal with things on a higher level, like we're designing yet a better supersonic airplane. That doesn't mean that we understand an airplane better than they could, 150 years ago. If they had the same stuff, they would go further than us. They were greater than us. Hashem, for various reasons, allowed certain breakthroughs in technology to happen, upon which one thing over the other, over the other, over the other was built, to the point that we now have, computers and lasers and all these things. But they were greater. So he says, when it comes to Cheshbon HaNefesh, so those previous people had an ever greater ability to just will themselves to do good and overcome their Nefesh HaBahamas in a way that with each succeeding generation, or each succeeding era at least, it became impossible. So he said the last and final attempt was this generation that was able to just sit down at night and decide what to do, and sit down during the day and decide what to do, in the morning and decide what to do, and then they're able to improve themselves. But he said, now, even that doesn't work. Okay, then he says, right. Yes.
So, when they made some this kind of a cheshben, the people, say the ones who were just able to sit down at night in the morning, would they think about the principles that they guided their life by, or would they think about specific situations that they might find themselves in and how they would act or react in such a specific circumstance?
I'm sure both. I'm sure both. Because you have to the civil Sharm says you have to be sensitized to what's going on around you, or else the desire to do good doesn't
propagate.
Go anywhere, because
yeah.
You don't know what to attach it to.
Yeah.
You're not sensitive to what's going on, what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong, unless someone's acting out in a way that's improper at home or with their family. So if he's not aware that it's improper and he wills himself to do good, doesn't mean he's going to will himself to change this part of his behavior because he doesn't realize it's wrong.
So this
both.
Was sort of a meditation that they would do on their day and their lives and
right,
stuff.
Yeah. Right. And it was a way that they were able to improve themselves.
Sort of like, a meditation with kind of an intent, right? They were kind
right.
of
right. Right. He seems
intending to act correctly. And
based on what's going to follow subsequent to this, it seems that people that he's describing here would just do like you hear in the secular world, people make a New Year's resolution. And when you always hear about New Year's resolutions, you always hear that they don't act, that they generally don't last. Because a New Year's resolution is just a decision that from now on I'm going to stop smoking, or I'm going to do exercise, or I'm going to eat well, or I'm going to say please and thank you when I speak to my spouse. I'm going to never yell at home. So, to do it once a year, and to just really think that your personality is going to change because you made up, that I don't think he's even talking about. Maybe originally, at the time of the Chumash, the way he puts it, someone could just look at themselves,
and
see
will.
What's wrong, and will themselves to be better, and that would get the job done.
It would be possible.
Here he's talking about someone that made a New Year's resolution every night and every morning and spent time on it. But he said even that is no longer efficacious. Effective. It doesn't work.
You have to be, I guess to be at the level, you would have to be totally in control of yourself,
Right, because you get up and you say, I'm not going to eat this thing I always eat. So it works until you're hungry and you want to eat it. The will disintegrates if the will to control it, if the desire has been habituated for a long time, it's very, very hard. Like when you want to get angry, at a time when you typically get angry, the fact that you made up in the morning not to get angry doesn't help. At this point, this is what he's saying. I mean, maybe it could, some people, nice. But as a rule, it's not going to matter too much. That's what he's saying. Okay? So now he's going to give an example of how he's going to kind of illustrate, I guess, and he spends time on it, because out there in the non-sophisticated, non-Musar educated world, this constitutes the attempt at self-improvement. To basically sit down and say, this is what I shall do. And that just doesn't work. That's his basic premise. It doesn't work. So, I think we've all probably experienced this kind of anger and sadness, frustration, where you really want to do something, and you really make up, and you really think, you can't handle it, you're going to do X, Y, and Z, and then 3 weeks later, it's like nothing happened. Because the deeply rooted behavior that's improper, the deeply habituated behavior, just can't be altered by the desire to change it, or the decision to change it, or the hard, fast thing. It just doesn't work.
But Rabbi, it said about tshuva that when you've done true tshuva, when you find yourself in the same position
right. As
before and you resist the temptation.
Right.
So if you were really going to do this cheshbon successfully, you would have to condition yourself to have that same piece of chocolate pie in front of you.
Right.
And just be able to turn away from it every time afterwards.
Right. It's just calling the same thing by a different name. He calls it cheshbon nefesh, you're calling it tshuva. You could do tshuva from, outward things that are easy to control. Let's say you could do tshuva from not, let's say a person that's not Shomer Shabbos, they could do tshuva from being Mechal Shabbos. You just change your lifestyle. You don't drive in a car, but you don't have the same inner drive. I don't think the inner desire to drive in a car isn't like the inner desire to get mad and angry under certain conditions. That midos hanefesh, the traits.
And it's
of the
true,
soul,
they're both averis, but like getting angry is like worshipping an idol,
Well, he's not talking.
Like if you do it on Shabbos, driving a car, whatever.
Right, well, he's not talking so much about that. He's just talking about the fact that it's very hard to get a handle on it in an enduring way. You can maybe make a New Year's resolution and you won't get angry for a week, or you'll diet for a week, or you'll do exercise for a week. But it's just very hard to change yourself in a permanent way.
I don't want to skip ahead, but I think I was trying to remember where I heard this, and then I realized it was from this book. It said, every time you find yourself in that position, and even if you aren't able to successfully resist, the fact that you made the effort, counts. Is that from this book?
I don't know. I don't think so. Because he's going to, you'll see what he says soon. But let's read. Let's read ahead. Okay. He says, Derek Marshall, for example, Kfar Yodua, it is known, Shanefesh HaBahamas, the Nefesh HaBahamas, Asuya L'Hachlif Rayonoseha, that it will change its thoughts, like I guess its preferences. That means its thoughts, literally, but it means what it wants to do. Al pi signon, according to a signon, means like in a fashion, mahalach kavu, a set way, shelo, its set way, tamid, all the time. Meaning that it's predictable. Like you would say, if you have a nefesh of Bahamas, let's say if a person has a taiva, for he has a lust for something, he has a nefesh of Bahamas that when he sees a drink in front of him, he starts drinking. So the nefesh of Bahamas goes from not drinking, but when it sees a bottle, it goes crazy. So that's a predictable thing. It's like an animal with a predictable response to a given stimulus.
Like Pavlov or something?
Anything, yeah. There's our nefesh of Bahamas is that. That's what he means. It changes its thoughts. Meaning, it sits there sort of somnolent, not thinking anything, But then when it sees something that stimulates it, if it's a lust for something, you know, a guy wants to drink its drink, it could be, you know, something erotic, it could be laziness, like he gets tired, so he just, instead of toughing things out, he always just collapses and goes to sleep, he doesn't have stick-to-itiveness, all these are Nefesh Bahamas things. So he said, it changes according to this way all the time. Vein bo koch lahashos, and it doesn't have the strength to wait. V'lamod berega, and to stand for a moment. B'machshova achas, with one thought, meaning the nefesh of Bahamas, which says, "Well, I'm not going to run after this booze." Now, the nefesh of Bahamas doesn't have the ability to say that when the booze is in front of it, this time I'm not gonna run after it. It's predictable that with the same thing that stimulated it before and caused this reaction, it's going to do it again. He says he can't do it to lossi al piratzel nefesh asichla maskelas, except with the desire of the nefesh maskelas, with the thinking soul. That the thinking soul says that at this point we're not going to do it, then it could overpower the nefesh of Bahamas and says this time we're not going to do it. She yichola litein resen b'fiyo, it could put a muzzle on its mouth, lakev osa, to hold it back, b'chdei ledachtek zman ma b'machshav achas, to stay for a while with one thought. Now it sounds almost like he's saying that the seichel gets the nefesh of Bahamas to want to go a certain way, like just like you can habituate your nefesh of Bahamas, let's say to get up in the morning when there's an alarm clock. You know, if people always, you know, you always hear this kind of a thing. The guy is a late sleeper. Then all of a sudden he has to get a job. He gets a job. The job requires that he's at work early in the morning at a certain time. And he knows that he has to be up at 5:30 in the morning to get there. So for a fellow who hasn't been working, that's a terrible travail to do that. First morning, it's like heck. It's terrible. It's difficult like anything. Second morning, it's difficult. Third morning, it starts to get a little easier. After a while, the second the alarm goes, he jumps out of bed in an effortless way. Now what's happened is that the nefesh hasichli has changed Nefesh of Bahamas, which wants to be someone, wants to stay in bed, changes the Nefesh of Bahamas to respond to that call. So he says that the Nefesh HaSichli can overpower the Nefesh of Bahamas to stick with one idea, which is to get up and stay with it. You know? So like it could also get him to go a different way. You know, he wants to go one way, you get it to go the other way. But he says the extent to which you can overpower the nefesh Bahamas at any given moment has a border, meaning that there's a limit to how much you can get the Nefesh HaBahamas to do at a given time. How much can he force his Nefesh HaBahamas? And when he pushes too much on it, he overloads it, he overloads when he overloads the Nefesh of Bahamas with too much work, azai he miskomemes b'koach, then it rises up with force, lahapil rochvo achor, to throw its rider backwards, meaning off the back, like I guess when an elephant gets up, so the rider falls back, lahachnes b'libo Dafka oson machshavos hayoser tsnuos etzlo. It'll dafka, meaning it's for spite, it'll put those thoughts into its head that are as particularly hated by the nefesh ha-sichli, b'chdei l'achnito, in order to aggravate him, to oppress him. So this is, he's saying now that if you imagine, let's say a person is training an elephant. So the guy is saying, you know, do this, do that, do this, do this. So his example is that you have to do it just in a proper amount, or else the elephant pushes the guy down. In other words, it's not just that the elephant doesn't listen. Like when you go too much, so it's like an airplane. If you push it too hard, too fast, it goes into a stall, meaning it loses the ability to be lifted by the wings, and it just plops down. That's called a stall. So it stops working. So he says that with an elephant, it's not just that it goes into a stall, meaning it stops listening to the trainer, but it rebels against the trainer, pushes him down, and steps on him. Meaning it responds to too much pressure by completely throwing off the guidance of the owner.
Rabbi?
Just a second. Now, what's fascinatingly interesting about this little paragraph at the end of, I guess it's 15, is telling us a very, very big secret about unsuccessful attempts to change, to bring our character traits under control. He is saying that if a person goes ahead and does something that involves an unwise exercise of force, or the attempt at an unwise exercise of force over that part of the person that needs to be trained, if it becomes excessive to the point that he loses the fight, so then what happens is that there's not just a situation where the soul no longer hearkens to what he's trying to say, but it's more than that. The soul does the very opposite of what you were trying to do. So let's say if a person is trying to, you know, get himself to stop drinking, and he does a push, he pushes too hard, then not only doesn't he succeed in getting it not to drink, but he activates in the soul the desire to drink more than there would have been if he hadn't been trying to get it to stop. So let's say if on a scale to 1 to 10, he was a number 7 level shikr. So the guy says, I'm going to stop myself from being a shikr. He goes ahead, and he pushes and pushes and pushes, and he pushes, and he can't make it. And the desire for drinking overcomes him, and he's a failure. He said, that desire for drinking now comes back as an 8. If he would have left it alone, it would have stayed as a 7. But his example is, you see, he says these words, that the Nefesh HaBahamas will try to specifically get into its head, specifically those things which totally aggravated the owner, and it's exactly what he wanted them not to do. More so, becomes an 8. Then if you push too hard with an 8, you go. So you see, like, the peril of making a New Year's resolution. A failed New Year's resolution is not necessarily just a failed New Year's resolution, but it may be a cause for more negative behavior and an increase in the bad behavior that wouldn't have existed, it wouldn't have taken place, the increase wouldn't have taken place had he not made the resolution. That is a very, very profound insight into people trying to change themselves.
Have I?
It means if you don't do it his way, I mean, don't do it a successful way, then that could happen.
So can you infer that the Nefesh of Bahamas has needs of its own that need to be, like the elephant has to be fed, right? If you don't feed the elephant and care for the elephant and bathe it,
yeah,
and brush it or whatever and feed it and let it rest and attend to its Nefesh of Bahamas, you know?
Yeah, well,
so
that's
you'll
not,
never be able to really discipline it.
Yeah, well,
right. Is that true?
Yeah. He said that earlier in the chapter, earlier in the book, that a smart person knows how to take care of his elephant. But here, it's not really an elephant. It's not really an elephant that needs to be bathed. It's just part of your own personality.
For the guy
and
who wants to drink,
you're trying to. Yeah. Right.
So maybe he needs to have a drink once in a while.
Right. Well, he said that. He might have said it before, that like a smart person, instead of telling himself, maybe some people could do it, not by telling himself not to drink, but let's say if he had 5 drinks a night, he could maybe get himself to have 4 drinks a night. And then he'll say, well, 4 drinks a night is way too much. That's true, but it's a realizable goal. So if someone gets himself to have 4 drinks a night, and then they get to it and they settle down at 4 drinks a night, only 4, you know, 4 beers every night, so then after a month or two, then maybe he can go down to 3 beers.
Right. It's like, suppose you want the elephant to lose weight, right? You don't put it on you don't stop feeding it. You reduce how much you give it, right?
You reduce it in a way that it won't revolt.
It won't revolt.
That's his point.
Right. You don't starve it to death.
Right, but the revolt, his point is that the revolt causes a rejection of what he was trying to do, and the desire to do for spite, exactly what the guy didn't want to do. That's a very relevant
insight. Recalcitrant. That means it kicks back.
It kicks back, but an elephant, you understand that he's saying it applies to human psychology also. That the human psychology kicks back and...
And imagine a rampaging elephant, what kind of collateral damage that's going to cause.
Well,
you know?
I mean, we're not dealing with elephants. He only uses the elephant.
I don't understand.
I mean, he's using the elephant to
suppose you starve your Nefesh of Bahamas to the point where it causes a lot of damage.
Did you ever hear like this, the term of yo-yo dieting? Like, yo-yo dieting, so they always say that they... You know, you force yourself to diet too much, and then it gets too much, and they break through, and they come back, and they gain, not to get back to where they were, but they get even heavier.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that he's talking about. Because due to the fact that there was an unwise application of force, or somehow it wasn't managed properly, it doesn't just create an abandonment of the diet, but it creates the desire to eat that was heightened now through this effort to the point that it's greater than it was before he started dieting.
Do you think this holds true?
It's worse that he did it. Worse to do an unsuccessful attempt that's partially successful then fails. That's worse than not doing anything. That's like an insight that you really got to learn from this.
Do you think that this holds true for the original cast of characters that we were dealing with, the ones who could wake up in the morning and decide at the drop of a hat to change their behavior?
Yeah, sure.
It applies to them too?
Yeah, because if, you know, maybe they had to wait for a drop of the hat, but if they wanted to do it at half a drop of the hat, then same thing would have happened. It's just everything is on a different level.
Okay.
See, they could do something in an hour that we could take, let's say, a month to do.
But
they
still
needed
an hour,
and if they tried to do it in half an hour, then the same thing would happen. It's the same basic psychology, that just in different proportions, right?
Okay.
Right, okay. Shall we continue or call it a night?
I think we should call it.
We should call it, okay. Yeah. All right, so we're up to 16.
Next one's going to be a story about two foreign students.
Okay.